So how do we go about looking into this? We can hand out this sheet. Thank you, Gary. And those of you, wherever you are, have received this. And you might like to look up the whole book, Questions of King Menander. It's all available as a PDF. So King Menander was a Greek, Bactrian Greek king in India. The Greeks and the Indians had a lot of back and forth, actually, and assimilated some of each other's doctrines. In any case, this king was approached by a monk named Nagasena. It's one of the most famous vignettes, really, in the Buddhist, certainly in the Pali canon. We read it in most of my classes. So the monk approaches.
Oops.
Mm-hmm. Oops.
Do you need it?
No.
Yeah, you need it. Do you have another one?
There are many. The monk approaches and the king says, in effect, he says, what is your name? How is your reverence known? What is your name? O king, people call me Nagasena, but that's just a designation in common use. It's just a convention. There's no permanent individual to be found here. One of the great exchanges. What's your name? Now you know in these Buddhist vignettes, it's never going to be that simple. There's a similar thing goes on when Buddhadharma gets to China, but we'll get to that another moment. A king asks someone, well, this is my name, but there's really no such permanent individual. And the king goes wild. He calls on the Bactrian Greeks and the monks to bear witness. In some versions, it says there are 500 Greeks standing there watching the conversation. It's kind of like a Greek chorus, I think. He says, what do you guys think? And they're all, you know, swaying and thinking this is crazy. This Nagasena says no permanent individual is implied in his name. Can you approve of that? So what is going on here? What do you think is going on here? Why do you even start with this? What's your name? Oh, I can't just tell you my name. I've been meditating that there is no, only seeing in the seeing. There's only being in the being. There's no, what's going on here? What is Nagasena doing? Is he being rude? What's he doing? Is he being politically correct in some way? Yes, ma'am. I'm sure we did this in classes with you.
Actually, yes, this is the very text that made me want to study Buddhism.
All right, then.
To answer your question, you know, when I was writing my dissertation, I came across this great phrase called hermeneutic shock.
Beautiful.
I think he's looking to induce hermeneutic shock here.
And why would he want to induce hermeneutic shock? Is that a nice thing
for a monk to do? It could be compassionate.
It could be compassionate? Hermeneutic shock is compassionate?
Could disorient the king.
He wants to disorient the king? That sounds very disrespectful.
If there were a permanent, inherently existent king, it might be disrespectful.
But maybe he'd... Bingo. Or if there were permanently existing Nagasena, it might be disrespectful. Because then it wouldn't just be talking, right? It would be me against you. All right, hermeneutic shock. Whose term is that?
I believe I encountered it in Cyrus Stern's The Buddha from Dolpo.
Oh, wow. Was that something Dolpapa was incurring?
Yes.
Oh.
Stern's thought it was his whole purpose in using the language he uses to talk about Gendong.
I see. Well, it is a long venerated Buddhist... I mean, look at the Zen tradition. It's all about hermeneutic shock, so... That's a great phrase. I think you told me about that at the time. I appreciate being reminded of it. So the king immediately thinks that Nagasena has denied his own existence. And he's going to let him have it. Oh, really? If most venerable Nagasena, that is true, who is it who gives you robes, food, and shelter? Well, that's a slap in the, that's not just a hermeneutic shock, that's a slap in the face because the king is supporting the monks. So who am I giving money to, O Nagasena, if you don't exist, right? Who lives the righteous life? Or again, he didn't read the other sutra that Harvey just read us. Or again, who kills living beings, steals, commits adultery, tells lies, or takes strong drink? Now we come to the real nihilistic bottom of all of this. If what you say is true, then there is neither merit nor demerit, nor is there any doer of good. There's just good, right? There's no doer of good or evil deeds and no result of karma. Now, you know enough about Buddhism to know that Buddhism really, really depends on the validity, the integrity, we could say, of cause and effect. If what you do doesn't matter, then why should you do good? If it doesn't matter at all, if it doesn't create any kind of effect, so really a plunge into the chasm of nihilism. If, venerable sir, a man were to kill you, there would be no murder. A fond theme in Indian literature, Bhagavad Gita, etc. Okay, so you've got your, there's no permanent individual there, so I can, you know, slice an arrow through you, and that's not murder. And besides that, there are no masters or teachers in your order, you monk. You say that you are called Nagasena. Now, what is that Nagasena? Is it the hair? Is it the hair of your head? And Nagasena says, I didn't say that. In other words, he is now, the king now, is taking Nagasena through the very kind of analysis that Harvey has been talking about and we have often been engaging in. And it's kind of an interesting turn, actually, but the king is so appalled by this that now he wants to question it deeply. He's doing the searching. He's gotten into, I don't know if he's really agnostic, but anyway, he's kind of coming on hermeneutically to Nagasena to see if he can push him to an extreme, at which point Nagasena will realize that he said the wrong thing. This is a very common strategy in debate, right? You think you say something, and then I push you into the consequences of what you have said, and then finally you go, oh my God, no, I didn't mean it. So, well, are your nails? But of course, we're meant to think about this. Is your hair you? When you see, when you think, when you feel, is it your hair? Is it even your ear? Because then it's your ear, right? Who hears? You? Your ear? Is there just hearing in your experience? Or is it the body, feelings? He's like in the Heart Sutra, he's going through the different mind and body, the different skandhas. So basically he's asking, as Nagarjuna formulates it, he's saying, you, is you, any parts of your mind or body, mind or body, is it you? Is that you? When you say, stop bothering me, who's the me? We Buddhists like to stop and look. We're very strange people. Oh, I've just heard myself say, stop bothering me. And it's really important to me. Oh, what do I mean? Well, I just had this feeling of annoyance sort of in my chest. If you do that thing, you know, one more time, something's going to come out. Words, feelings. But if I actually look, is the first moment of that irritation me? Is the second moment me? Where is this me that's so irritated? So mind or body. Now the king leaps into the chasm of nihilism once again and says, ask as I may. So Nagasena says, nope, 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 nope. It's called the via negativa, right? The negative path. It's not this, not this. Goes back to them. Ancient Indian Upanishads, neti neti, it sounds so good in Sanskrit. Not this, not this. No, Nagasena, I am not my eyes, not my hair, not my nails, not my tongue, not my consciousness, not my feelings. Well, then, I can discover no Nagasena. This is what Harvey was saying. But the king doesn't quite get it. He thinks that this is an absurd conclusion. Nagasena is an empty sound. Who is it we see before us? It is a falsehood that your reverence have spoken. You're lying. You're telling me that you don't exist. But I can see you. I know that you exist. Nagasena is very clever, of course. And he slowly leads the king to reflect on his own life. He says, well, king, you're born in luxury. You travel everywhere in a great chariot, you know, a red Mercedes that suits your status. Do you not? Well, yes, of course I do. Well, then explain to me exactly what constitutes your red 2017 Mercedes. Is it the steering wheel? Oh, is it the front tire? So you have to understand that this works when there is a tremendous investment in it. It's like, okay, I'll buy your car for $2 million if you can find it for me. So tell me, is it the car's steering wheel? Is it the tires? Is it the front tire, the back tire? We can say with the Mercedes, is it a motor? He talks about reins or yoke or chassis. Is it all of them combined, or is it something separate from that combination? King is pretty sharp. He says it's none of those. Then Nagasena says, well then, your chariot is empty sound. You spoke falsely when you said you came here on a chariot. You are a great king of India. Who are you afraid of that you don't speak the truth? Then he calls upon the Bactrian Greeks and the monks swaying in the background to some disco tune, snapping their fingers, and asks them to bear witness. He said that he came here in a chariot, but when asked what it is, he's unable to show it. Is it possible to approve of that? And they all say, get out of this one if you can, Mr. King. He says, no, I've spoken the truth. It's because it has all these parts that it comes under the term chariot. This is a magic moment. This is the magical moment in Majjhimaka of recognizing that there is actually a difference between the name and the thing that gets named. It's okay to call a Mercedes, but to think that that the seeing, which is only seeing, isn't seeing a Mercedes. The seeing, which is only seeing, is some seeing some red form in a particular shape. And then you slap on Mercedes and make it real, and it becomes there. It's part of the process of othering, you know, an object. And then we feel that the Mercedes is what we see. There's a conflation that occurs. We don't think anything of it. We just think we're learning how to use language. But from a phenomenological perspective, in terms of what we are doing, this is what reification is in part. Reification is partly constituted by feeling that what we call a thing, that there is a chariot there other than a collection of parts which gets the name chariot. Because when we say there is a chariot, Mercedes out in the parking lot, it's like it's there, right? And it's showing itself to us. Isn't that? I mean, that's how I feel. I'm like, oh, Mercedes, oh, really? Whose Mercedes is that? Let's go have a look. But when I feel there's a, you know, collection of tires and motor and dashboard, and front and rear fenders and headlights and front lights and on and on and on, computer systems. And that's what I call a Mercedes. There's already a kind of recognition of a field of activity, which is a process. I am naming it Mercedes. Nobody ever saw a Mercedes, just like nobody ever saw Nagasena. Nobody ever saw the king's chariot. Because when they're seeing and just seeing, there isn't this kind of naming. And particularly, there isn't this kind of conflation. So this is a way of, this is a meditation. You're welcome to look into it and argue it. Usually you'll have arguments, which we will be happy to take up with you about why you think it doesn't change anything. Because for Nagasena and Nalanda and for the Buddhist traditions in general, this is a really big insight. It's a really big insight. And once we can recognize, you know, let's say you don't like a certain group of people. You give them a name. I don't like X group of people. People who live in certain areas, or people look a certain way, or people who have or don't have a certain kind of education, right? And they are the others that I don't like. And they, just by conflating this name, this otherness with them, is a failure to recognize that this, we all live in a kind of mutually created world, and they're really not that other. They're part of the field of our experience. And that can, again, soften the distance and open more to compassion. Well, there's a lot to say about this, and it's very interesting. And maybe that's enough said for now, but we'll take a moment and we'll have a little break. Take a moment. Do you want to have a break first?
I don't know what to say.
You don't know what to say? We're agnostic. Okay, let's see. If you have stuff, you're on fire. Do you want to, anything you want to say or disagree with or just worry, wonder about or be agnostic about?
So I've never met anybody who has a voice like yours or a voice like yours. Harvey and Anne, you have your own very mm-hmm. unique voice that it occurred to me that even if I didn't see you, I would recognize that voice if I heard it. And same with you. And that sense of meanness and hearing your voice just kind of struck a chord with me.
Mm. So somehow when you recognize that there's a distinctly recognizable voice, that also made you aware of the me that was the recognizer? Is that what you're saying?
Maybe I thought of you as opposed to me. That's you, that voice
I heard that voice,
but it's your voice.
Okay, I get it. So that for you was a moment of seeing, you know, the self-other thing, or the you-me thing.
Yes.
Is that
yes,
right?
Yes.
Very nice. That's a precious moment. You keep that alive. You can revisit it. See different ways in which it occurs. And also, you know, in time, see what seems to soften it.
So it's a real, well, it's actually a lot of deep stuff in all of this. But part of it is that the second you go towards subject, you are kind of creating object. The second you're creating object, you're creating subject. If you can actually be in experience without that overlay, it's yet again free of that overlay. And, you know, what kind of avenue opportunity do we have for being in our experience? Just bare experience, if you like. Because ultimately, bare experience as such is not going to be denied or rejected. It may be understood as in certain ways, or its status may be understood in certain ways, but it is a given. We are seeing one another. But is it subject-object seeing, or is it just seeing? And what's the difference between just seeing and subject-object seeing? And, you know, of course there can develop all sorts of interesting doer fixations, like I have to get rid of my sense of I. And so, you know, you may spend some months or years.
Lifetimes.
Befuddled by that particular complication. But you might also on occasion just recognize that, oh, I just was, it was just hearing. It was not sense of I. Things to contemplate.
And then, go ahead. Oh,
just a quick comment. It's also a mutuality. It's a mutual thing. Like when you talked about the sun, it's the same sun, but we all see that dot up there that we call sun.
Right. That's a whole other layer of construction of things. Yes.
Right. And the you who sees it, not only has the sun shifted since the last time you saw it, but you have also. Although we tend to feel, I think Jack Engler came up with this example, Harvey was in a way referring to, we tend to feel like we're a marble, unchanging, rolling through a landscape. You know, things are changing around us, the sun is moving, and we're, you know, here I am again watching the sunrise, but actually we're not here again. So identifying that, you know, experience is very helpful. Self-other experience, and how quickly we go from simple experience to something else, to naming. That's why I was wanting to value what Terry said, you know, making that kind of instinctively distinction between, well, what I felt was and what I assume is. And as soon as we feel, we assume. We're always moving between actually direct perception and projection. We're actually not in direct experience most of the time. We see something and we say, good. Where does that good exist?
And it doesn't mean that you actually need to go into a glommed out, cloud-like state of existence. Because one of the, in a way, hard to explain or detail, but you can be exceedingly clear in your perception, and you could have this perception that I am distinctly getting this sort of clear discernment of the real quality of Anne's voice. And at a certain point, even that clear discriminatingness can be clear discriminatingness, but with a dissolution of the subject-object.
And in fact, become even clearer, because the I inevitably is like a lens, you know, that inevitably distorts to some degree or other. So when we sang, you know, precise wisdom, that is exactly that kind of perception. It's very precise, but it's not doing othering.
If you enjoyed this teaching, please visit our website, donmountain.org, to subscribe to this course and find other great Dharma offerings. May all beings always have happiness in its causes. May all beings always be free of pain in its causes.